Today, an estimated 20 million Americans live in mobile home parks, and the vast majority are located in rural states. Whereas one in six West Virginians lives in a mobile home, New Englanders may never encounter a mobile home park. So states the website Buildium.com in its Investing in Mobile Home Parks blog. Now, while there's still a stigma for many who live in these parks, and many parks are run down and not well kept, many of the parks are quite nice places to live, and they all serve an important niche for individuals in need of affordable housing. On the investor side of the ledger, mobile home parks have a good risk-reward metric. For example, rates of return on invested capital can be 1% to 3% more than apartment investing, and also mobile home parks have operating expenses well below comparable apartment complexes and the like. So you have a conundrum. Mobile homeowners who are already in a tight money, low income world have to contend with investors who want a healthy return on their money. So this is a lot to consider and reflect on. To discuss this, I've invited Tim Sheehan. He's a mobile homeowners advocate and immediate past president of the National Manufactured Homeowners Association, and I've asked him to discuss this with us. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you very much, Steve.
So this all started for me when I received a letter from a listener describing some of the serious issues that are confronting mobile home owners. Give us a brief history of the development of the mobile home park. I guess it kind of was a World War II thing, which expanded after the war, and where we stand right now.
Okay. Well, generally, like you mentioned, there was a transition from the trailer tie campgrounds, gradually accepting single wide and then later double wide mobile homes after World War II. And technically speaking, homes built prior to 1976, when the HUD code went into effect, were technically the mobile homes, and any homes built after 1976 are considered manufactured homes. Okay. As an advocate, we like to call them all manufactured because they're manufactured in a factory and they're not so mobile. And I'll probably get into that later to express how in our communities, the homeowners are really trapped. But the big boom in development really occurred in the late 60s and into the 70s when thousands of manufactured home communities were constructed, especially in the Sunbelt states. It was a particularly great way for seniors to downsize to retirement communities and semi-rural areas where the land was cheap. And by doing so, that opened up their site-built homes in the cities for the workforce. And so it was really a win-win with the tight affordable housing in the cities. This created more opportunities for families to buy affordable homes in the cities and not have to commute like they are today. In my area, Southern California, some people commute 2 hours each way to work.
Yeah.
And that's real unfortunate. And today, despite that, it's really been a success story, particularly in California and other areas where there's some security of tenure, particularly by rent ordinances to limit unfair rent increases.
Mm-hmm.
Despite that, they've built virtually no new manufactured home communities to speak of in California since the probably mid-80s. And so it's a real unfortunate trend that there have not been new communities constructed, and the manufacturers have suffered tremendously. In the late 90s, they were making maybe 300,000 or 400,000 homes per year nationwide, and it dropped down to as few as less than 50,000 per year for several years ago. It's coming back up a bit, but that's mainly replacing some of the older homes.
When I was researching for this interview, one of the sites suggesting, and actually it was talking to possible investors, said that you look at the rental costs for apartments in the area, and then you cut that in half, and that's what you charge a mobile home if you own a mobile home or mobile home park community. Does that seem pretty accurate to you?
Well, it really depends. You know, there's a lot of good park owners out there that are reasonable with their rents, but we're concerned with this trend of the big corporate conglomerates taking over the industry, and their goal is to maximize profits, and they do that by raising rents and reducing expenses, which means skimping on their maintenance.
Yeah.
And so both things impact the homeowners. And so it really varies as far as that comparison to apartments. In some areas of California, park owners are declaring the apartment rentals in the area establish what a market rent is that should be applied for manufactured homeowners, even though the manufactured homeowners are renting a patch of dirt and are responsible for maintaining their home and their landscaping around their home.
Yeah.
And we know that in some of our communities that were purchased by the residents after being land lease communities, once they became resident owned, the cost to operate and maintain gorgeous communities with many amenities, pools, clubhouses, everything, can be $200 a month or less to operate and maintain. And so anything above that is typically pure profit for an investor.
Let's talk about some of the issues here. So when you look at investing in apartment complexes, for example, or just really any rentals, the owner of those rentals can raise rates exactly as much as they want to. And theoretically, if they raise the rates too much, then people have the right to move and go to other rental communities or find another rental somewhere. So they can vote with their feet. They can say, this is way too high, you're out of line, and they can move elsewhere. The big companies that you alluded to have come in and they've built these big rental properties and bought others, and they're able to do that as well. And they're still under the same competitive restraints that the market imposes, as I've just mentioned. When it comes to mobile home parks, though, you know, if they try to do the same thing, the same type of dynamics that exist in apartment complexes don't really exist in mobile home parks. Because really, Tim, are these mobile homes mobile?
No, absolutely not. Once they're set in place, they're not intended to be moved again. And in my area of North San Diego County, many of these homes were placed in the late 60s and early 70s and are still on those home sites. And who knows when they would be needed to be replaced or moved. And, you know, if things get too unbearable in a given community, a homeowner cannot just hook their home up to a truck and move it out during a day. They're not trailers. In fact, we call that the T word because that feeds that negative stigma and stereotype.
Trailer park.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there are trailer parks, but trailers have hitches and wheels. And our homes had the hitches cut off when they were placed and have no wheels, no axles, no engine. And it can cost $20,000 or more to relocate them. And there's virtually no option to moving to another community because most of the lots are full already because they haven't been building new communities. And most manufactured home communities don't accept older homes. And so it is a real captive situation for homeowners. And, you know, the ongoing fear is that no matter how good things are today in a given community, it can all change overnight if your community owner changes.
Let's just, you know, talk about the way the ownership works here. So the person who bought the mobile home actually owns the home, the manufactured home, but they don't own the land that it's on. So the mobile park owner owns the land and they're charging rent for the land. Well, how is that different than, let's say, a condominium?
Well, we do have condominium communities in my city of San Marcos, North San Diego County. Out of 18 manufactured home communities, 7 have converted from investor-owned land lease communities to resident-owned condominium subdivided communities. And we have 4 others that were bought by nonprofit operators, and they continue to be rental communities, but regulatory agreements with the city provided a security of tenure that would limit the rent increases. Plus, we also have a rent stabilization ordinance that protects the other investor-owned communities. And I give that ordinance a lot of credit for motivating so many of the park owners to sell to the residents or to the nonprofits.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a pretty good solution to this. Are you seeing that start to expand around the country?
Yes. There's other states like Oregon who are adopting protections in some cases, not just for manufactured home communities, but for apartments also. This trend to the corporate conglomerates purchasing our communities also applies to apartments. And many of these conglomerates have foreign investors even. And we try to make the argument that for every dollar an ordinance can save a homeowner or a renter in rent is a dollar that can stay locally to be spent locally for, you know, goods and services to circulate time and time again to fuel that local economy rather than going to out of area, out of state, or out of the country to some of these investors. And so it counts up into millions and even billions of dollars over time that is lost from the local or state economies.
My guest is Tim Sheehan. He's a mobile home owners advocate, immediate past president of the National Manufactured Homeowners Association. Tim, what is the National Manufacturers Homeowners Association?
It is a national advocacy group that serves the interest of manufactured homeowners who live in these communities. We work with partners at the national level trying to get policy change and protections at the national level. But in many cases, most of the action is at the state and local level, as it is in California. So we work with a lot of statewide groups, similar, comparable advocacy groups. But in many of the states, they have no state association. And, you know, one of the reasons is that they have no state civil code protecting advocates. In California, in our state mobile home residency law that's codified in the civil code, we have protections like just cause eviction protection, that there's got to be a good reason for a community owner to evict one of our constituents, our homeowners. But in many states, they have no state civil code and no protections for homeowners. And a manufactured homeowner could be given 30 days notice to move their home and all their belongings out of their community. So instead of just cause eviction like we have in California, it's just cause eviction, just cause I want you out.
Just cause.
And you can imagine the message that sends to anyone who's trying to organize the residents to stand up for fairness.
Right, right.
They just are scared into submission and take it. And consequently, some of these states, we have no advocacy groups.
So what has been the industry's response to the issues that you've described here? And I'm talking about these, you know, as you call them, conglomerates that come in and buy up all these properties and try to get as much profit for their shareholders as possible. What has been their response to you and your colleagues?
Well, there's an arrogance and even an intoxication that goes along with this wealth and power and prestige that I think they don't hear their own conscience anymore. You hear about these corporations not having a conscience, and I firmly believe that is the case. They rationalize that they owe it to their shareholders to maximize profits. But I actually bought shares in one of these corporate owners, Equity Lifestyle Properties, after one of their communities in Santa Cruz, California, a gorgeous community right out on the ocean. But out in the mid to late 90s, homeowners there got a notice, or some of the homeowners in the community got a notice that their rents were going to go from the $600 to $700 range to $5,000 a month for lot rent in that community.
Right.
The city had an ordinance at the time to block that increase, but this corporation kept suing the city, and they sued them into submission. It cost them to the point that the city gave up the ordinance, and they brokered a long-term lease for the existing residents. But when they go to sell, or even if an heir inherits a home, I'm told that on some of those view lots, the rent could go to $5,000 a month, and no one's ever paid it. So consequently, the community owner gets it. And that's a big distinction from an apartment landlord, because by raising rents alone in our communities, these unscrupulous segments of the industry are able to capture or seize or steal these homes for little to nothing, because if the rents are high enough, the homeowner can't pay to stay in the park. They lose, in some cases, their life savings because they can't continue to live there. They're on fixed income seniors. The younger people would default on the loan. So that hurts not just the homeowner, it hurts the lender. And the park owner gets these and makes it by reselling it or renting out the homes.
Yeah, the whole formula seems to be out of whack. By the way, that company you mentioned, I think that's run by Sam Zell, who is a Chicago-based billionaire.
Right.
Made his money in real estate. You have people who are on fixed incomes. It's generally a low economic segment of society, really can't afford these big raises. On the other hand, you've mentioned this property, which is sitting on prime real estate on the ocean. So there's economic forces in this particular instance, and I guess all over, to capitalize on the value of the underlying land. But where are these people going to go? Because they're already in a place where they can live and afford to live. And yet by changing these economic dynamics, it can change their lives dramatically. Tim Sheehan, consumer advocate for mobile homeowners, past president of the National Manufactured Homeowners Association. Thank you for your answers and for describing this problem for us. It's not something we can solve here, but at least we can understand it a little bit more. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate the opportunity anytime to help tell our story, because it's a real unique situation. But if we don't preserve it as the largest form of unsubsidized affordable housing, with so many baby boomers entering their retirement years, more and more people are going to have to seek government subsidized apartments or living.
Exactly.
And we want to avoid that. And in California, we have many examples of manufactured housing done right. And we hope that that can translate into other areas of the country.
Well, this segment came from a listener's question. And so we really invite listeners to ask their questions. To hear this in any interview again, or if you yourself have a question about investments or anything in your own life that you want us to try to address if we can, visit our website, stevepomerantz.com, and join the conversation and sign up for our weekly update for upcoming live events and important topics that we've covered this week that go straight into your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com.